So I must confess, last night when somebody raised the question whether or not we would have Shira, I said, of course we'll have Shira. But then about an hour ago, I thought to myself, what a terrible idea.
I mean,
I have that post-fast headache, heaviness.
Oh, really?
But, and I, you know.
A sermitable that feel like you wake up in the morning and it passes on.
No, es chata'ai ani maskir. I thought of canceling. But then, you know, there's, Baruch Hashem, there's so much Avas HaTorah this week.
Right.
The Siyam HaShas, everybody's
loose. Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's loose. How can we cancel? Anyone start learning Daf Yomi?
It said in the newspaper they haven't seen so many happy people at Shea Stadium in a long time.
It wasn't Shea, it was the Meadowlands.
No, it was in City Field. In New York City, they did.
No, it was at MetLife in Meadowlands.
That's where they met? MetLife?
No, MetLife is the Metropolitan Insurance Company, not the...
Oh.
It was in the Meadowlands, but
don't
run
his joke.
Yes,
in a way, it's the same joke. Like, you haven't seen that many happy people at Shea Stadium either in a long time.
I mean, I don't know what it says that they had a Siyam HaShas and 90,000 people came.
Amazing.
Some of whom actually had learned Shas.
Some of them were women.
And but even bigger.
And one of the policemen said, you know, I've never had a crowd this big and there wasn't one.
Not one drunk, yeah.
No complaints of pickpocketing.
Right. But, I went to they had the women's Siyam HaShas on Sunday night. It was fabulous. It was just... Was he? I don't know. I was there, but they didn't have any... He didn't speak. No. What?
Which one is this?
The women's Siyam HaShas at the Binyan HaYumah on Sunday night. What? I mean, it was all types of organizations. Matan was one of the sponsors, but they had 3,300 people, men as well as women, mostly women, and it was just very spectacular. Anyway, so even I started learning the Daf. I mean, it won't last, but in the meantime, what? Halavai, it should last. But I think it's the fourth time I've started. But I'm not when I stop. I'm not disappointed because I don't have any illusions that I'm going to be able to keep it up. But, you know, the train leaves the station. You want to be on it. You want to...
A friend of mine from work, who lives in Tamal, used to live in Limon. This was his fourth time going to the Siyam HaShas.
Uh-huh.
Fourth time finishing Shas.
Call it? You can go to the Siyam even if you didn't...
No, he said, like, this is the fourth time. Like, this time.
It's just
is
very...
Is there like a test at the door?
What?
Is there like a test at the door?
No, if they did, they wouldn't get 90,000 people... Someone said in one of the articles I read, they said that worldwide there are 350,000 people who finished in the cycle.
Yeah,
I have no idea how they could have possibly calculated that number. But
how could they possibly? There's just no way to calculate.
I doubt we could get an accurate count of how many Daf Yomi Shiurim there are, let alone how many people learn on their own and how many people learn by listening online or a podcast or. Okay, anyway. So let's start. We're on Kaf Dalet Omud Aleph. We learn this Mishnah in the middle about the procedure of how they were Mekadesh the Chodesh. Shall we review that? Rosh Beit Din Omer Mekudash. So after they accept the testimony and they've in the middle of Kaf Dalet Omud Aleph. After they've accepted the testimony and there are two witnesses that corroborate each other, the Rosh Beit Din says, Mekudash, it is sanctified. V'chol ha'am onim acharav, Mekudash, Mekudash. Oh boy, is it sanctified. Ben shenira bezmano, ben shelo nira bezmano. Mekadshin oto. Whether the 30th day is Rosh Chodesh, or whether the 31st day is Rosh Chodesh, whether it's Mechusar or Mu'ubar, so they do this procedure. L'chura, if it's the 31st, you don't have to do anything, because automatically it becomes Rosh Chodesh,
right.
But nevertheless, that's what the Mishnah says.
Is there a reason why they have to repeat it twice?
Wouldn't you think that that's exactly the question the Gemara is going to ask?
Like
their newer weddings.
So hold on to your seat. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Why do you say mazel tov twice? What?
I'm assuming that goes back to this.
In the wedding, they say mikudeshes. Mm-hmm. The Masada Kedushin says after he says Harayat Mekudeshetli and Mekudeshet. Mekudeshet. You think Arkel is best done?
Hmm?
Maybe. I don't know.
What did you say?
At Shalom says at weddings.
They do it twice.
That's what the crowd says?
Yeah.
All right. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Im lo nir bezmano ein mekadshino tosha kvar kitshu b'shamayim. In other words, if it's a mu'ubar, so there's no point in doing this procedure because anyway, automatically it becomes Rosh Chodesh. In other words, you're sitting around on the 30th day, and witnesses had not come the night before, and no witnesses come today, automatically at the Shkia, you enter the first of the next month, which is Rosh Chodesh of the next month.
Well, we just heard, like a couple lines ago, that even if 1,000 people show up, you still go through the whole thing because you don't want them to feel, but you want them to keep coming. So wouldn't you say the same thing?
The question is whether or not you need to examine the witnesses, or whether or not you have to do this ceremony of saying Mekudesh Mekudesh. They're two separate things. This mission is talking about the procedure of declaring Mekudesh Mekudesh, which might be independent of whether or not you've examined the witnesses that afternoon. Rosh Betin, the Gemara says, Minahane Mili. So what's the source for this? That he has to say Mekudesh. Omer Rabbi Chaya Bar Gamda, Omer Rabbi Yossi Ben Shaul, Omer Rabbi. Omer Kra, Vayadaber Moshe et Modei Hashem. That's the pasuk that we say for Kiddush on Yontif. Right? That Moshe spoke about the holidays to the Jewish people. Mikan, Sherosh Beitin, Omer Mekudesh. When it says Vayadaber Moshe, what did Moshe say? Right? So he spoke about the sanctity of the days, of the calendar, of time. So from here we learn that's the source. Now obviously this doesn't sound to be like a biblical source. You think this procedure that the Rosh Betin says Mekudesh and the people say Mekudesh, Mekudesh is Deraisa? No, but L'chura not. Right? Probably. So it's a kind of a smachta.
It's also not clear that the Mishnah is giving you a lot. This is like telling you what the procedure
was. What the procedure was. This was the ceremony.
Right.
V'chol ha'am oni macharav mekudesh mekudesh. Minalan, what's the source for this mekudesh mekudesh? Omer of Papa Omer Kra. Asher tekru'u otam b'mo'adam. Right? Ela mo'adei Adonai mekrei kodesh. Asher tekru'u otam b'mo'adam. These are the two psukim of Kiddush on Yontif. Asher tekru'u otam. That you, plural, will declare them, will call them, will set them. Kri bei atem. Al tikrei otam, ela atem. In other words, he says, we read the pasuk, asher tikru'u atem, that you, the Jewish people, should say them. Reb Nachman bar Yitzchak amar, ela heim mo'adai. Heim yamru. Mo'adai. Right? In other words, the people should declare that it is the Rosh Chodesh. Mekudesh, Mekudesh, Trei Zimnei. Oh, Baruch Shekivanta. So, why do you have to say it twice? Lamali, Dichtiv, Mikro'e Kodesh. Because it's plural. This is just an asmachta, right? It's just a kind of... You with me?
I'm with you.
People are awake?
Yep.
It's hard after fast. Elizabeth Sadako Mer, Im lo nire bezmano ein mekadshinoto. if the moon was not seen on the night following the 29th, and anyway it's going to become automatic, so then you don't have to go through the procedure. Tanya, Palemo Omer, you know who Palemo is? Palemo is a Talmud of Rebbe. Palemo might mean the Zuckin, the old guy. That might not be his name, it might be like a nickname. But he was, what does that make him if he was a Talmud of Rebbe? He's the last of the Tanoim or the first of the Amoroim?
Yes. Okay.
So Palemo Omer, Bizma. Well, there are certain transitional figures. Yeah, if you were the last of the Tanoim, you didn't know it. It's not like somebody, it's not like somebody stood up one day and said, "The modern period begins today." What era did the Rambam live in? No, he lived in the modern era. The Rambam looked out his window and said, "Oh boy, can you believe it? It's like the Jetsons out here. The technology we have. In the old days, they didn't have any of this." Everybody thinks they live in the modern world because they do live in the modern world. Right? In 100 years from now, they'll look back on us and say, "Can you believe they had to carry around these devices in their pocket? How primitive." Beep, beep, beep. Right? They'll just... And what else would they say about us?
You had to actually use money.
Money. We ate animal flesh. That'll probably be something that goes out of style. They'll be on their space station looking down at the detritus that was left behind on Earth, underwater. So Tanya Palema Omer Bizmano Ein Mekachinoto Shelo Bizmano Mekachinoto. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Omer Ben Kach Uven Kach Ein Mekachinoto. He says no. This whole, we don't do that procedure. What's described in the Mishnah, he disagreed. You don't have to say Mekudesh. You have to do the testimony. But once, when does the moon become Mekudesh? When does the month become Rosh Chodesh? As soon as you have the two witnesses that testify. That's something else. But this procedure, this ceremony of Mekudesh, 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 says we don't do this. In other words, you've seen enough court procedurals, right? How does it work? The jury goes into the jury room, and then they come out, and they read the verdict. At what point is, it's like a halachic question, right? At what point is the guy guilty?
After they read the verdict.
Well, after they read the verdict.
No, when the judge, he's guilty. The minute the jury decides that he's guilty, technically from that moment forward, he's guilty. He just doesn't know it yet. The public doesn't know it yet. And the judge doesn't know it yet. But from when they decide he's guilty,
It's like a Shiloh, right? Well, what if they change their mind before they read the verdict? If they change their mind after they read the verdict? What if the judge throws out the verdict? What if... So maybe it's only... They read the verdict. They say the defendant will rise. And they say, "Mr. Foreman, have you reached a verdict?" And he says, "We find the accused to be guilty on all charges." So, like, until the judge bangs his gavel and says, "Case closed," maybe it's not over. Or maybe it's only over once the paperwork gets filed in the court. Or maybe something else. So Rabbi Elazar says the point, would you please get rid of this already? You keep passing things back. Maybe the point is that it becomes it's me, it's not you. It's trust me. It's me. Your snacks are appreciated.
Yeah.
What? I didn't eat the whole day. So maybe the point is that when the Eidus is accepted, that's when we say, okay, it's Rosh Chodesh. And you don't need to do this ceremony of him declaring...
No, the Eidus was accepted. It doesn't tell you that Mikudesh.
Huh? But why? So he says, when is it Mikudesh? I mean, is this the halacha? Is it not the halacha?
Right?
Shnemar v'kidashtim et shnata chamishim. For Yovel, there's a halacha that the betin has to declare it Yovel. But there's no such, right? There's no such pasuk about Rosh Chodesh. What's the pasuk by Rosh Chodesh? Achodesh hazelachem, Rosh Chodeshim, right? In other words, we know that min haTorah you have to have the Eidut and all of that. But that's not in the Psukim.
Right.
The role of the Betin in Kiddush HaChodesh is not explicit in the Torah. But you know what is explicit in the Torah? Yovel. In Yovel it says that you, the Jewish people, have to declare the 50th year to be Kadosh. Even though it's mathematical. Right? After seven cycles of Shemitah, that's when the 50th year you have the Yovel. Shanim ata mikadesh, v'iata mikadesh chodeshim. So he says there's no such halacha to declare it Rosh Chodesh. So Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Omar Abaye, af anan nami tanina. Ru betin v'chol Yisrael, nechkru ha'edim, v'lo hispiku lomar mikudesh, ad shechashecha, hare ze mu'ubar. So you see there's a Mishnah that's against it. Because what does it say? Everybody sees that it's Rosh Chodesh. And all of the Eidim come. And for some technical reason, they don't bang the gavel until after Shkia, until after Betin goes out of business. What happens? It's not, which means what? It's the declaration of Mikudosh, which is what does the job. Mu'ubar in... Mikudosh lo meuba itzterechle. So if it's a meuba, so that's the case when Rosh Chodesh is seen on the night of the 29th. So why would you still have to do it when it's a meuba? In other words, let's say it's the dead of winter, and there's cloud cover for 72 hours, and nobody saw the new moon. Betin sat there in the cold waiting for the aid to come. Not a single aid came because?
Because they couldn't see the moon.
Because nobody saw the moon. And maybe even Betin knew that it should have been a mechusar. It should have been a 29-day chodesh. And the 30th day should have been Rosh Chodesh. Maybe they knew like astrologically. Astronomically, that was a test for you to see if you were awake. So,
exactly what it means. The month is always the same way. What do you mean they knew astronomically?
No, because they knew that they knew
the moon
when
would appear, yeah. Wouldn't appear. Okay.
So, but it doesn't matter, right? Bechol zot, what do you have to do on that last day?
You
still say mikudosh, even though it's kind of unnecessary. Right?
Yeah, except that generally we don't do two different... We don't have two different approaches to the same...
As you say, low plug.
Something like that.
Right, low plug is this idea that we always do it the same way even when there might be no reason to do it that way because that's, you know, we're Jews.
Well, it right? Could be confusing. People would not necessarily understand that it's the month.
Oh, so it's directly... No, there's a need to say mekudesh, mekudesh, even when it's not... technically necessary. Salkadat chamina ho'il v'ru betin v'chol Yisrael ifarsema v'lo le'ibrua kamash malon. Because people might have thought that since everybody had seen it the day before, the case of the Mishnah, everyone saw it. They knew that, everybody knew that Rosh Chodesh should have been on the 30th. Right? So maybe there's no need to declare it because it's already declared because it's a... Because everybody saw it, everybody knew it. Right? No. because that's the role of Betin. Okay.
We also don't want to have a situation where Hoskins with themselves. This one saw it, this one didn't see it.
Right.
This town saw it, this town didn't see it.
So now the next Mishnah. Dmut surot levana hayu lo l'Rabban Gamliel betavla uvakotel ba'aliyato. Shebehen mare et ahedyotot v'omer hakaze reita o hakaze. He had, what do you call those, astronomical tables?
Charts,
astronomical star charts, right, of the moon, of the sun. If you look in the back of the Rambam, oh, you have pictures?
Yeah, I'm trying to see this picture that way.
In the back of the Rambam, in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, he has charts like this. I mean, I don't think the Rambam drew those, but they're printed in the back of the Rambam, Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh. But they were charts that showed like where the moon would have been, right? So that a witness could have come, and instead of having to describe it, they could have pointed
after the moon.
Right, right. So his point was it A, B, C, or D? Did it look
a lineup?
Like a lineup, exactly. Which of these guys did you see pick the bucket? So now, this is really interesting.
It makes sense for the people that might not know the difference between north and south.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So here's, it's not clear exactly.
What this Gemara is from where?
This is from a special Friedman. I think Rav Shai Walter worked on the appendix.
Meaning this is it's a regular Vilna Shas Gemara, but it has these color pictures in the back with all the astronomy stuff.
Yeah. Anyhow, so here's like the Erech, one explanation would be, like you're saying you saw a crescent moon, so what kind of crescent was it? Was it a thin crescent? Was it a thick crescent? Was it facing right? Was it facing left? Was it facing down? There's different kinds of charts that you might understand the Mishnah to mean, but it's, something like
something
this.
Like that. So now, if you hadn't prepared ahead, you might be wondering, okay, what's the Gemara? Like, I always tell you this. It's like a good kind of mental exercise to do when you're learning to try to anticipate what the Gemara is going to ask. The Mishnah says, Mekudesh, Mekudesh, so you correctly intuit that the Gemara is going to ask, why twice? And Kachava. So I might have thought the Gemara would now describe for me what these charts look like. I might have even thought that the Gemara would have given us an illustration. How many times in a Gemara are these kind of complicated word descriptions to describe some kind of physical artifact when a picture would have been so much easier? There are certain things that are just really hard to describe.
Didn't have a good editor.
Right. There are certain things that are really hard to describe in words.
Sure.
Chaim Soloveitchik famously gave an example in his Rupture and Reconstruction. Imagine trying to write out instructions to teach someone in a vacuum how to tie your shoe. It'd be impossible to do. It's the kind of thing that can only really effectively be learned through the mimetic, through sitting on your mother's lap and having her take the loop and showing how the rabbit goes around, goes into the hole, and you pull it through. Right? So, wouldn't it just been easier just to give us a picture? So, okay, the Gemara didn't do that. So we can say, the Gemara didn't do that because, in the ancient world, they didn't do that. Except what? The Gemara is telling, or the Mishnah is telling us that Rabban Gamliel understood this. And he had such pictures. They were extant.
Can't you say that Rabban Gamliel is leading the witness?
No. Because it's like the lineup. Right? We want somebody to make an eyewitness identification of the suspect. So we put a dozen guys up, and if they can pick the guy out of the lineup, so then that's a kind of corroboration that he may be guilty. So they would give all the different possible astronomical things, and they would have to point. Right? which one it was. So the Gemara doesn't talk about any of this. The Gemara talks about a completely different problem, and quite in that associative way that the Gemara works.
Well, being associated before you get to the Gemara, since you talk about the difficulty of describing things without pictures, and you mentioned the Rambam, so if you ever learn Rambam Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, you find entire paragraphs there, which, like, in a modern sense, it's like a table of sines and cosines. You know, it's for 10 degrees, the value is this, for 20 degrees. But in the Rambam, like, it's written out, you know, le'esrim ma'alot hazeh, tafshin chaf mem, blah, blah, blah.
And it's even more complicated by the fact that we don't use Arabic numerals.
Right. It's all written out. Right. And you figure, like, this is, like, why there's so many errors, like, over the generations, because, and also, like, if you're trying to look at the Rambam, you'd never recognize that there's a table of numbers there. There's just this very long paragraph, right. Whereas in, you know, modern typography, you make
right.
it
right.
A
you
table,
write, you write
and
out a formula, and so the Gemara says, Umishari, how was it mutter for him to have these images of the sun and the moon? Now it turns out that this becomes one of the this sugya here is a home address for something completely unrelated to the topic at hand, right? But all discussions of representing images, you know, which is a problem because, you know, we don't like the graven image. We don't like
Ten Commandments, all that.
Picture, Ten Commandments is text.
It says in the Ten Commandments.
Oh, yes, it's in the Ten Commandments. Sir. I thought you meant images of them. We don't, you know, actually once Rav Steinsaltz, when they first, you know, the Koran Steinsaltz Gemaras, which, you know, were just completed in advance of the Siyam HaShas. They worked on it for 7 years. But there was an earlier attempt to translate the Steinsaltz Gemaras from Random House back in the late 80s, early 90s. You remember that?
I have the intro.
Right, so there was an intro, and I think they put out Bava Metzia, and that was it. They did it. It was very expensive, and it was very... And so in the New York Times Book Review, on the cover of the New York Times Book Review, Leon Wieseltier, who was, you know, a very, very significant literary critic. And he's the fellow that wrote the book Kaddish.
Yes.
Right? So Wieseltier...
All cynicism aside.
All cynicism...
He's a master cynic.
Oh, yes. But he's also now, you know, kind of been brought low because of Me Too. But so he wrote the cover review in the New York Times Sunday Book Review on the Gemara. He's a learned man. He's, you know, he... So, and he's trying to explain to the general readership, like, what is the Talmud and why is it significant that it's now being translated? So he says that Judaism is image poor because of our kind of discomfort of graven images. But no culture can live without images. Right? You need some. You need, like, there's a reason. We understand it's not our tradition, and it would be against our religious principles. But we understand why in Catholicism the idea of an icon is so powerful. You walk into a church, not that we should walk into church, but those who walk into churches understand there's something visually powerful going on. He says,
you walk down the street in Innsbruck, Austria.
Yes. Yep. So he says, so Judaism, unable to have icons of its own because of this religious prohibition of lo ta'asuniti, right? Nevertheless found an alternative icon. And what is that icon? This. The text. The icon of the page of Talmud, right? Which represents, you know, multi-generations, what Rabbi Soloveitchik called the symposium of the generations, right? In conversation with each other, a central text, commentary on the text, Rashi, Tosfos, super commentaries, paraphernalia, etc. This became the iconic image of the Jewish people, the portable, what Heine called the portable homeland in the text, right? What was it that sustained us as a people, right, for all those years of exile? Contrary to popular belief, it wasn't humor, right? Jewish humor. There's this idea that it was the Jewish humor that, right? And it wasn't stuffed cabbage, right? It was our connection to the text. Because while we didn't have a homeland, which is usually the one criteria that creates a nation, we instead had a portable homeland in the text. So Mishari, how could it be mutter that he had these, that he had these images? Asra Torah. Ela Shamashin Shefshar La Asot Kimotan. The Torah
actually Asra. I mean, we know it's not actually Asra to paint the picture of the moon.
Are you sure?
I mean, the Jews paint pictures of moons.
Who's we, Kimosabi? Well, hold on, hold on to your, hold on to your knitted kippah.
I always thought that it was like the images of people.
Also,
or of the sun and the moon, or
it says specifically in Esrat the Dibrot, you know, you don't look at the sun and the moon and the stars.
You worship.
Yeah, but it's in the same paragraph as we have an image.
You ready? The images that he had, probably like, you know, like stick drawings.
Well, that may be an answer, but the question...
Shalom, from your question, I would think you didn't prepare ahead in the Gemara. Mishari, Vachtiv, Lota Asun, Iti. Lota Asun, Kidmut Shemashai. Don't make images of my servants. So who are God's servants? I might think that this involves the heavenly bodies that are up there in the heavens. Omar Abaye, lo asra Torah ela shamashin she'efshar la'asot kemotan. No, so Abaye says it's only forbidden to make images of the servants of God, the heavenly bodies, or other such objects, where you can draw them the way they actually appear. But you can't actually represent the sun. In other words, you draw a yellow circle. That's not exactly a rep. It's an abstractification. Kiditanya, and how do we know this? What is the source of the idea that the thing that's forbidden to draw, to portray, is when it's a kind of realistic portrait? Lo yase adam bayit tavnit hechal, achsadra tavnit ulam, chatzer keneged azara, keneged ezra. Shulchan keneged shulchan, menorah keneged menorah. A person is not allowed to make scale models of the Beit HaMikdash. You can't make a model of the ulam. You can't make a model of the shulchan alechem apanim. You can't make a model of the menorah. Oops. Ah, so you're aware that there's the Machon HaMikdash, and they do this.
Not only the Machon HaMikdash is saying over here, you can't make any candelabra with seven branches.
Yeah.
With wood or metal. Or
yeah, anything. Yeah, you can't. So, but how does that, you've been to the Old City.
But it's not the Old City. We have representations of...
No, not to, you can't build a...
Exact replica.
You know, you can paint a portrait, but you can't build an actual menorah, right? Or an actual shulchan. Shulchan meaning the lechem apanim.
In its dimensions?
And it's presumably in its dimensions. You know, there was my kid had they have the science fair. So, you know, she and her friends, they're in the house for 3 days making the science fair thing. Did you see that thing somebody put on?
Doesn't your wife do that?
Doesn't my wife do what?
The kid's science fair and the rest of
Yeah, she does it, but I have to live in the house.
Oh, okay.
It, like, takes over the whole living room. So, and, like, why? Like, all the kids, why is it always in my house? Like, why don't they go to one of the other kids' houses? So, you saw, like, on Facebook, somebody did this thing. It looks like a science fair, you know, like the science fair board with the three sides, right? It says, examining the effect of the science fair project on stress levels in the home, you know, and on the one flap it says, requires, you know, the things you need for the experiment. You know, one procrastinating kid, one stressed out parent, not enough time. And then there's the graph that shows, like, you know, as it gets closer to the deadline, the amount of stress, you know, the results. Children, you know, 90% of children cry. 75% of parents yell. Conclusion, everyone hates the science fair. So in Orot Etzion, they have, when they learn, when they finish Shmot, they have the thing, every kid has to build a something from the, yeah, they build, I mean, my older kid built like the Mizbeach and the Choshet, you know, out of cardboard boxes and spray paint, and I don't remember what one of the other kids did. So this year my daughter made the lechem aponim. I mean, it helps that her mother's a baker. So they baked, you know, they made like this tavnit, and they made the, you know, this funny shaped bread. And so I said, the whole thing's awesome. And then you have to go, there's like a night where you go for the festival. The whole thing is awesome, you're not allowed to. I thought I would just write a note, we'll get out of it. No. So you can't, what, now why can't you do this?
So
how does Machon HaMikdash do it?
Yeah,
that's what they say. They say they're doing it to be ready for Mashiach Viltkimen. We're ready.
But it says you can't.
But Taka the Gemara says you can't. So they have if you go onto their website, you can read how they.
So how does the Beit Sefer do it?
Because I think if you make it out of cardboard, it doesn't.
But it says here, even if you make it not out of metal.
It's a Shaila.
No, it's definitely a new thing, because people didn't used to do this.
Right. So Aval, you understand that there's a certain Zionist, messianic, I could say. No. Well, I mean, there's no end to chumras, but hopefully in the Mosa Mashiach we'll have done away with that. But the point is that you can't make it look, because what's the problem with building the avizarei hamikdash?
They're supposed to come down.
You can't have.
Yeah, because it looks like you're doing avodah b'chutz. Aval oseh shel chamisha v'shel shisha v'shel shmona v'shel sheva lo yaseh. So you can make a. So wait a second. How do we have? Didn't you light? When we were kids, we called it, in America, we called it a menorah. Now they call it a chanukiah. That's a newfangled Hebrew word, right? To distinguish the Hanukkah menorah from the menorah to Mikdash, and to distinguish it from the menorah that you have hanging from your ceiling. So, but you can make a menorah. How many branches were there in the menorah to Mikdash? Seven. So you can make a menorah with eight, with nine, with five, with four. You just can't make it with seven. Afilu shel shar mine matechot. You can't make it. Obviously, the menorah to Mikdash was made out of gold, so you can't make it out of silver. You can't make it out of iron. You can't make it out of. Right, Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer af shel etz lo yaseh kederech shasu malchei beit hashmonai. In other words, in the Mikdash, when the Hashmonaim came and the Tiruot the Mikdash, they couldn't build a gold menorah. Why?
They didn't have any oil.
Because they didn't have any money. It was after a war. They had spent all the coffers trying to save the place. So they made a temporary menorah out of wood. Maybe it was covered with gold plate, but they made it out of wood. So even that you can't do. You can't ever make a menorah with seven branches. Now, would you believe it? There's an entire Agnon story that's built on this one line of the menorah. There's a story that begins. It's actually quite a wide ranging story. It tells the entire history of his town of Buchach through the prism of a menorah that they had in the great synagogue. In the 17th century, there was a Jew from Buchach who did a favor for the king. Maybe he lent him money, maybe he gave him advice, whatever it was. And the king wanted to reward him. So this character, this Nachman, who was he was like the court Jew, he said, "Oh no, your majesty, I'm happy to help. You don't need to pay me." Now why would a Jew say such a thing?
Well, then the king is your favor.
Yeah, it's better. It's whatever the king is going to give you. The best thing that you can have is an IOU. Because one day, you know, the Cossacks are going to show up and Khmelnytsky will show up. And if the king of Poland owes you an IOU, it's... No, it's better to have the IOU, because you can call that in. So, nevertheless, the king sends a gift to the Beit Knesset. What does he send? He sends his beautiful menorah with seven branches. So what do they do? Because the king had not learned this Gemara. So they have this seven-branched menorah, and they don't know what to do, because they can't throw it away, because it's a gift from the king. But it's also usur to have. So they come up with a solution that they break off one of the arms. They break off the center arm, so now it's a six. No, so now there's no problem. But what they have this little hole. So what do? They call the silversmith, and he fashions out of the silver the semel of Poland, right, which was this kind of white eagle. And they place it there to show how patriotic they are. You know, just like in America, they always had, like in all the shuls we grew up in, on the Bima, there was an American flag. And why was that? We don't do that here. You don't go into shuls and see an Israeli flag on the Bima. Even in the most even in the most Sioni places, you don't see it. Why is that, that in America you have the American flag on the Bima?
People shouldn't accuse you of being not...
So in World War II, FDR asked all places of worship... Now this culture in America of flying the flag, that's a relatively new thing. That wasn't always the case. Right? Now, I mean, after 9/11, it's really gone on steroids. But...
After Pearl Harbor.
So after Pearl Harbor, FDR asked, you know, all public institutions, even government buildings didn't fly the flag. This whole thing of, like, saluting the flag in school when we were kids, and etc. This was a... So FDR asked all places of worship to please fly the flag to raise patriotism. And, of course, all the... And Jews were the first to do it. Why? Because these were all immigrants. And there's nobody as patriotic as an immigrant. So and then after 48, when people started, we would put the Israeli flag side by side. So they covered up this little dent in the menorah with this white eagle of Poland.
But that was okay to have in the shul?
Yeah. Just like it's okay to have a flag.
What year is this occurring?
The story begins in the mid 17th century.
In the 1600s.
Yeah. And then later, Poland is divided, and this part of Poland, what today is Western Ukraine, what's Galicia, becomes part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. One day, the local Austro-Hungarian governor comes in to, you know, show his face to the Jews, and what does he see? On this old menorah, he sees. So the Gabbai comes. He takes the hammer, and he whacks it off. And the Austro-Hungarian governor says, "Oh, yafe asita," because if not, I would have suspected that you were disloyal. So what do they do?
But the eagle was the symbol of the Austro-Hungarian.
No, the eagle was the symbol of the Polish Empire, the Polish kingdom. The double-headed eagle was the symbol of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So they smelt it down, and they make a double-headed eagle, right? And they put it... Anyway, the story goes on, and it tells the story of this town up until after World War I. And it was one of these kinds of places where you'd go to sleep at night in Poland, you'd wake up in Austro-Hungary, right? You go to sleep in Austro-Hungary, you'd wake up, the Germans were in control, the Russians were in control, right? You didn't know what your address was until you put your head out the window in the morning, right? And it's this expression of how difficult it is for the Jew to be kind of caught between halakhic practice and, you know, keeping your own neck and being patriotic, being the need for the Jews to be close to power, but not too close to power, and all these things told through the prism of this one line in the Gemara. Anyway, let's go on. Afilu shamin etz yasek derek shasum afayachashman. Amru lo misham raya shipudin shel barzel hayu vechipun bebatz heeshiru asum shel kesef chazru veeshiru asum shel zahav. Right. And as he says, that's what the Chashmonaim they had. First they made it of wood, but they covered it with with bars. They made it with iron, and they covered it with
tin,
which is like shiny. And then they covered it with, when they had more money, with silver, and then with gold. So what does it mean? V'shamashin she'i efshar la'asot kemotan misharei. So, okay, so the Gemara said it's only usher to make, in other words, you know what a menorah looks like. So it's usher to make a menorah. You know what a shulchan looks like, it's usher to make a shulchan. Like it's like a one-to-one representation. But the things that you can't actually make a model of, I mean, it's true, in science class, we all made those models of the solar system with, you know, styrofoam balls, you know, painted yellow and purple and... Right, but that's not an actual representation of the sun because it's not a gaseous ball.
Yeah, but this is true of any idol or painting or picture. It's never, a picture is 2D and the object that you're talking about is 3D. I'm not sure what the Gemara is going to tell us, but
right. So
any representation isn't 100%.
Right, but I guess it's a question of like how close it is to. If I make a statue of a, I don't know, an animal, a horse.
Well, the horse is flesh and blood in the statue.
But besides it, but it's a one to one representation.
It doesn't
right?
have it's a heart. It doesn't have.
Besides it, but you understand that for the problem of graven images, it's enough that it's a physical, that it, and at a certain point, it closely enough physically represents the actual thing.
I mean, by definition, it's a. What's the word in Hebrew? It's an image. It's not a duplicate. You're not...
Right. So, but that's the point. When we say that images are forbidden, what's the definition of a forbidden? Obviously, not everything. We're not Muslims. And Muslims have a very strict definition.
It's not clear what our definition was in the time of the Mishnah of the Gemara. They were apparently much stricter than we are today, but...
Anyway, so the Gemara says, what do you mean that things that you can't fully represent are not forbidden? Like the sun, who says it's not forbidden? Mishari, v'hatanya, lo ta'asuniti, lo ta'asun kidmut shimash'ai, ha'mishamshin lifanai b'marom. No, we're talking about the angels. In other words, the planets, the sun and the moon and the stars in between, those are the lower servants. And as Chazal, when Chazal talk about heaven, they understand that and this God doesn't like live like up there in space. In other words, this is metaphorical, right? So we say that God is in the heavens, right? So then there's like the heavens that we can see with our eyes or with our telescopes, and then there's the supernal realms beyond, which might not be a physical place. This is that's we're talking about those in the marom, in the higher heaven. And those are like the angels. So Omar Abaye, lo asra Torah, ela dmut arba panim, bahade hadade. So what would be forbidden? You know, in Yecheskel, we talk about the Maseh Merkava, and the image of the four beasts, etc. So that's what we're, like the image on the chariot, so that's what we're not allowed to do. Ela me'ata partsuf adam l'chudya tishtare.
We don't know what the chariot looked like.
But in other words, whatever that description is, if somebody wanted to make an image of those animals described in the chariot, apparently, the Gemara here says, that would be problematic.
But it's okay to do the sun and the moon and the planets.
That seems to be the assumption here. So, Tanya, kol partsufot mutarin, chutz mi partsuf adam. Right, and in terms of human representation, so you can make other besides those animals in the Maseh Merkava, you can make images of animals. You can't make images of the human form. So Omer Behuma Bereder of Idi, wait, where did I go? Mifakia, right? Take it apart. So in other words, how can you do it? How can you make an image of a human form if you make it, how do you say, incomplete, right? If it's not a full, like, there might be a, let's say you're Michelangelo. So to do like David, you know, which is really like a complete, the complete human form. But if you're only, let's say, making a bust of the head, you're making it and somehow it's not complete. There's something that's not full, or it's like a bust, or it's a statue that's only, you know, like from the front but not from the back. So that's not forbidden. De'abaye shmi'ale lo tasuniti lo tasun oti. In other words, Chazal didn't think that God had human form, but we imagine somehow that the human form, the Tzelem Elokim, is a reflection of something about God. So the problem is making a full human form, but a partial human form is mutter. V'shar shamashin misharei, and the other, and then the Gemara goes back and asks again, and the other shamashin, the other servants of God, like the sun and the moon, who permits that? V'hatanya lo tasun iti, lo tasun kidmut shimashai hamishamshin lefanai b'marum. Kegon ofanim srafim v'chayot hakodesh u'malachei hasharet, but not apparently
the stars
and the sun and the moon. So Amar Abaye lo asra Torah ela shemashin shebemador ha'elyon shebemador ha'tachton misharei v'atanya asher b'shamayim l'rabot chamau levana kochavim u'mazalot mima'al l'rabot malachei hasharet. So here's a source that says even the sun and the moon and the stars in between are forbidden. Kitanya hahi la'avdam. That's, you can't make, when can't you make those images of the sun and the moon? When you make them as idols to worship them. I la'avdam afilu shilshul katan. So if that's true for like a worm. Like what if I make a statue of a worm? You know who makes statues of worms? Any kid that played with Play-Doh. Right, you roll out the Play-Doh, it looks like a little worm. So if you make a statue of a worm, which is, why does he choose a worm? It's like the opposite of the sun and the moon and the stars and the Malchei Hashareis and etc. So if you make a worm, if you make a statue of a worm, because you're into worm worship, that's your religion. So Taka, even that is Aser. You don't have to be like the highest of the high. So 9:30. Enochinami, the Tanya Asheba Aretz Larabot, Harim, Gvaot, Yamim, Naharot, Afikim, Geot, Mitachat Larabot, Shilshul Katan. The Gemara is darshening the Psukim in Eseret Dibrot about making graven images. All right, we have to stop, but we'll finish this up next week.